Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Harmonize with me and hold me tight all through the night. You're shining bright. I'm your oyster, baby. You're my pearl.
Hiya, Dom.
Hiya.
How's things?
Things are fine.
Yeah?
It's hot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hot, all right. I have to say, I like your pants.
I think I told you about these pants earlier on. These pants... baggy red pants. These were in tribute to a still image that I saw one time of Tom York, the lead singer of Radiohead. He was doing a photo shoot wearing very, very baggy black trousers. And I thought, man, they look cool. And then I was walking around and I saw a pair of trousers that were red with the same kind of fit. And I thought, I'll have them.
And you look fantastic, Dom. They're just cut off at the bottom. Cut right off.
Yeah.
Did you do that?
Yeah.
Well done.
Well, unfortunately, they had these little hooks, like kind of toggles on the bottom. And if you walked around barefoot and you got your foot on them, it was like standing on a piece of Lego. So I cut them off.
Quite right.
It allowed the trouser just to kind of float around a little bit more kind of gypsy-like.
How's your week been?
It's been pretty good. I've been, you know, desperately avoiding the sun.
Yeah.
Because it's so hot.
Yeah.
And trying to keep my garden alive.
Yeah.
So the thing with me is I'm usually up around about 6:30. Seven, so between 7 and about 9:30, I can water the plants, and then I have to hide inside.
Right.
Go to the gym, and then I can't then water the plants until probably closer to 6. So then I run outside and water the plants again until it gets dark. So it's just a whole practice of trying to keep my plants alive. You can see them physically go from
they're wilting.
Wilting. You give them some water, back up to feeling good.
Good.
Good for you. What about you?
Yeah, it's been a good week, actually. Did a bit of cooking, did a bit of surfing. It's been good, actually, yeah. Did a little bit of music. Yeah, good week.
I was on the west side and I said, I might come over. And you said, all right, I've got a few things going on.
Don't think you said mate.
I'm coming over.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, okay, I've got a few things going on, but come over. And then I thought, it sounds like it's a bit of a hassle. So then I said, I'm not coming over. And you said, why? I didn't answer because I was driving. And then later on, you just sent me a photo of my dinner. And you said, this is the dinner that I bought for you. And I thought, oh, it's quite angry.
It's quite expensive as well.
Did you have it yourself? Did it get caught in your throat? Did you choke on it?
No, it's still in the fridge. I'll eat it tonight.
Treat yourself.
I will, I know.
I'm sorry. I thought, right. I wanted to get home before the traffic.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
Well done.
But to be honest, my dinner last night was half a bowl of soup and a bag of crisps.
Well, that's all right.
So I probably
in the soup?
No, as a side dish. So I probably would have benefited from coming over to your house.
You would have enjoyed it.
Now, this week we have a fantastic guest.
Oh, what? I mean, if you're talking Lord of the Rings, which we sometimes do.
Sometimes.
This would be one of your, well, certainly top three.
There were, I believe... number one, number two, number three, number four on the call sheet.
Yeah.
I think, were you three?
I was four, I think.
I think I was three then. Number one, Elijah Wood.
Had him.
Number two.
Yep.
Is our guest today. The fantastically talented Sean Astin. Who I believe played Sam Wise Gamgee in The Lord of the Rings. Who later on became known as Sam Gardner. Did you know that?
Sam Gardner.
Yeah, they gave him the name Sam Gardner because of his ability to till the soil.
A bit like yourself.
Mm-hmm. And he became mayor of the Shire?
Did Mayor Gardner?
Mayor Gardner.
Done. Here he is.
Sean Astin is here!
Is he, Dom?
Look,
is
on the, he's on our screen.
He's on the TV screen.
I was going to do bad maths there. I was going to say 2/3 of the hobbits, but that's not right, is it? It's 3/4 of the hobbits. Is that right?
If it was all three of us, yeah.
Right.
He's not very good at math. I don't know if you know that about him, Sean.
Oh, God, Sean.
I just figured it out just now. Because I'm never good at math either, but 3/4 I got.
Yeah. I'm bad. I actually had to ask Billy the other day, what was the thing? Oh, I said, I've got 15 plants. I want to plant them in even numbers around my garden. How do I do the maths for that? So Billy had to help me out with that. That's how bad I am in maths.
Because it has to be a whole number.
I think you need 30. Well, you need 30. And then you can have 15 and 15, which would give you a total round number.
That would have been great.
Yeah, it's got to be a whole number.
Yeah.
Right? Because you can't have half a plant.
So is it 3? Did we hit upon the number of 3?
I think you had 5 groups of 3, which that works. But he wanted 4 groups, and you can't have 4 groups into 15.
Mm-mm. No, you can't.
Anyway, right. Sean, this is not gonna work for the audio listeners, but there are a lot of people that watch this on video.
If they could see the inside of my mind with the math wheels turning, they might be slightly more entertained because it's a kaleidoscope. So I want to buy you a plant to make it even, but please. Then Billy sorted it out where it's evenly divisible by 5. So
well, Sean, but by, I mean, yeah. Of course, buy me a plant. I mean, why wouldn't you buy me a plant just because we're pals? But you know,
you probably wouldn't need to buy one because you know you've got plenty behind you.
Yeah,
there.
Where in the Amazon jungle do we find you, Sean?
Yeah, it's just home. You can hear the dogs now. Christine just got home, so all the dogs are gonna bark for a minute.
Christine.
But we're in the backyard.
Nice.
How many dogs? Lexi,
there's 5.
Ooh. 5 dogs.
We had like 2 and then COVID hit, and so instead of like trying to get one of those online therapists, we just kept getting a dog every 6 months.
Wow, Sean. So 5 dogs. How many daughters now? 7, 8?
It's 3 daughters yet. The little one just turned 16 yesterday. Aye.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow, 16. Yeah.
16. I still picture Allie as being like 3.5, 4.
So Ali, for anyone listening and you don't know, Ali was the daughter that Sean had already when he started Lord of the Rings, and she was a big part of our adventure in life down in New Zealand. She was always on set, and she had birthday parties, and we were all part of that.
Yeah.
So how old was
she
Ali?
She was 3 when we went down there, celebrated 4th. And 5th birthdays down there. You guys came. That we had that one party.
We had the party in the bag.
Party in the bag. Yeah, which was awesome. And then everybody drew. We still have. So we covered the inside of one of those easy up tents with brown paper, and then everybody drew. Yeah. And made drawings and their names and everything else. So we tore that and we have it in the garage. So if you ever need to see that, I think we can try. Yeah, that's one of our keepsakes there. But But she was 7 when the final premiere happened in New Zealand. So she was a benchmark to watch as we went.
And did she have memory of it?
Oh, mate, it's when it comes time for all of us to do a photo shoot or something.
Yeah,
I think you might have seen this at one point, but. You know, over the years, they'll have us do, you know, a reunion photo shoot for this magazine or that event or whatever. When she comes to it, it takes her days to recover from it. She cries. It's like she's a very intelligent, she went to Harvard. She's a very brilliant girl and everything. But she regresses back to that time. And she, I don't know. It is deeply emotional for her, much more so than me. I'm like, yeah, hi guys, you know. But she's very emotional.
I love
it. Yeah.
I mean, she became all of our little, everything. Like, we were kind of surrogate babysitters and like our little niece, you
uncles.
Know? Yeah. Yeah, uncles. Yeah. Every time we went for dinner, because as a group, we all went for dinner very often. You know, the 4 Hobbits and Orlando, and you know, there was a core group that very often went for dinner, and Ali would consistently be running around the table, spending time with all of us and hanging out and drawing on our knee and all this kind of stuff. So it is, I mean, I'm sure it must be bizarre for you too, Sean, but it's very bizarre to think.
Well,
oh, yeah,
I always thought of those as the pre-drinking hours.
Right.
Because, you know, once, at a certain point, you know, she's young and we'd have to go to bed. And then the next morning, you guys would look different. And you had the night before.
Definitely.
So, yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, that was that. To me, that was one of the greatest things about being able to do it was to give her. It was an incredible experience for all of us. But for something happens, you know, Billy, in your mind as a parent, something changes in your brain, and you see everything through their perspective. And I was having that experience down there, and so yeah, so she just to see her. And you were it. You guys were the experience. Like, yeah. I got to give her this experience, and the experience was you lot.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So talking about that then, the experience and seeing it through someone else's eyes and stuff, what is your first memory? Like, can you remember coming off the plane for the first time coming into New Zealand? Or what is the first thing that you think, oh yeah, I remember that. Like getting the script for the first time. What was it?
Well, if we look at it like that, like the first memory of kind of landing,
yeah,
it was a little bit hazy on the airport and the transfer, but I do remember we didn't get to go straight to the hotel. I think we went straight to Stone Street.
Who were you with when you said we had to?
Christine and Ali were with me, but I mean, there were other. Were you not there? Were we not there together? No, I guess maybe.
No,
you guys
I came in with Orlando.
Right. I was so.
Look
tired.
Him! Look at him! Looking at his brain. We're going to work this out, Sean. We're going to get this.
I remember the Urukai rubber suits at Stone Street Studios. Because
right.
Everything was, you know, it was an abandoned paint factory, and every hallway had some other thing that was, you know, here's the miniatures, and here's the this. And at a certain point, I remember thinking, I'm going to die from exhaustion. But the mentality they set coming off the airplane was, you know, no, this is a work day. You know, so we're going to, and Pete wants you to come to Stone Street straight away, and he wants to visit you. I remember seeing the pre-visualization of leaves.
Right.
They brought us into this room and they said, okay, we really want to show you what we're working on with the software. And we had just traveled like 15 hours, you know, and I'm looking at it and they're like, and you can see this. And it was just leaves. It was just leaves. Like, what are you? God, I'm part of something spectacular. I mean, it's going to have great leaves. I can tell you that much. but I also remember, do I even go there with it? There was a, the Urukai outfits.
Yeah.
The rubber suits, the villain, you know, the disgusting things that those poor guys had on for months at a time.
Yeah.
There was one that looked like Harvey Weinstein.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I mean, it was an absolute photoreal image of Harvey Weinstein on this villainous Urukai rubber suit, the mask or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I don't know if I was supposed to say anything. I did not at that point know about Miramax and how they had initially developed the film and the whatever issues they had with that man who's not doing well now. But anyhow, yeah. So that's it. That was my first, you know, that was the first memory. And then going over to that hotel across the street from the museum, the Tapapa Museum.
Yeah.
Remember 10 points gorgeous, for anyone like, who remembers the hotel.
Duxton.
Oh, well done. 10 points.
Yeah.
Yes, you're up 10.
Duxton.
10 points.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Sean. I know
I've been listening to the podcast, so I know how important points are.
Oh, very important. We're very competitive.
Very competitive.
I flew in with John Rhys Davies, and I had the exact same thing as you, Sean. I remember thinking, okay, cool, we'll get to the hotel. I'm probably going to have the day off now, maybe the day off tomorrow, and then we'll start. And I got a phone call half an hour into that day, and they said, there's a car picking you up. And I just thought, there must be some mistake. You must know that I've just done a 32-hour flight. You're thinking about tomorrow. And they were like, no, you're going to come in, see Pete. He wants to give you a tour of the studio. And I think you're right, Sean. I think he had made a specific statement with all the actors. As soon as you hit the ground in New Zealand, you're mine and we are at work, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want you to develop the relaxation right. mode.
Right.
You know, you're not coming to a spa.
Right.
You know, you're not going to have a bit of a tour and walk around the city and see how it feels and like, nope, you're yeah. there. I also remember very clearly walking into that room with you guys with the swords laid out on the table.
Right.
When yeah. we were going to do the sword training at that barracks. It was that I think it might have actually been a. Do they have a navy? Does a navy?
Yeah, I think it New was Zealand a navy barracks.
It was like a submarine
That's
base
right.
or something.
Yeah.
But it was an army barracks. We were in an army barracks, and they, you know, from the 60s or 70s or something like that. And and we went in there, and we got to choose our swords, and then Bob Anderson, the gorgeous, wonderful, brilliant, legendary sword master who taught Errol Flynn and. Who else did he teach? He did the Star Wars. Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Sword fight and Princess Bride. He did that. Yeah, and he was teaching us, and we were good at it. I thought we were very good at it.
Well, you and Billy had like a routine, didn't you?
Yeah, when you say we were good at it, you mean we were good at it. Me and you, Sean.
Elijah.
I don't know if Elijah and Dom were that good.
Elijah was too busy smoking cigarettes. I could never have a sword fight with him. He's always out smoking cigarettes.
When you pay for a job site, you should know what you're getting. Get Indeed and only pay for quality candidates that meet your must-have requirements. When hiring gets hard, you need Indeed, the job site that makes hiring incredibly simple. Just attract, interview, and hire. In fact, with Indeed, you can do all your hiring in one place, even interviewing. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. Indeed knows how important that is to make the most of your recruiting hours and dollars. With Indeed, you can save time and money by setting your must-have qualifications and only paying for the quality candidates that meet them. Get started right now with $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at indeed.com/onion. Get a $75 credit at indeed.com/onion. Indeed.com/onion, offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply. If you're like us, you're probably sick of scrolling through mindless programs that you don't even want to watch. Well, I tell you what me and Dom love. Wondrium. Fantastic streaming service that your brain will never get enough of. There's just so much to explore. We love it. Wondrium offers endless opportunities to learn something with thousands of hours of video and audio. Fascinating documentaries, helpful to-dos, and answers to every question that you've ever asked. If you're familiar with the Great Courses Plus, then you already know Wondrium. It's the same great service, only now it's bigger and better. You're going to love it. Some of the stuff I've been listening to lately and watching, Mind-Blowing Science. That's where I get all my facts about black holes. Another fantastic one, great revolutions of modern history. I was looking at all the revolutions in France and Russia and United States as well. Great stuff. We know you love Wondrium, so we put together a special offer just for our listeners. A free month's trial of unlimited access. Just go to our special URL, wondrium.com/onion. That's wondrium.com/onion. Think of how much you'll learn in a month. Go to wondrium.com/onion.
What was the reason for that party that we ended up doing? We did a sword fence for it.
Was it the start of the?
That was the kickoff party.
Yeah, that was the kickoff party. So that was a party to say we're about to start filming, sort of thing.
And they did the Maori thing right? A little Maori blessing there, I think.
And Bob Anderson specifically asked me and Dom. Not me and Dom, me and Sean.
Whatever.
To do, you know, to show everyone how amazing the sword
fence is. Because he was intimidated by Dom.
Yeah, it's true, Sean, it's true. Do you guys remember, I tell you what a big one was for me.
He was more approachable.
I tell you what, a big one for me was the, do you remember the pre-viz that Pete showed us at his house? So Pete has got this wonderful house on a bunch of different levels, and there's a lot of nooks and crannies and corners in Pete's house, and obviously the house itself has been built with extensions, and it's quite a strange-shaped house.
Yeah.
Very kind of, you know, idiosyncratic.
There's passages that lead places.
Right.
And stairways that go places you don't know.
Right.
Yeah,
very kind of, you know, Pete Jackson-centric. There's a lot of, like Sean said, doorways to places in corners of rooms. You're like, well, that makes no sense. But whatever. He brought over the Four Hobbits, guaranteed, I think, Orlando as well at that point, the early boys that were there.
Ian was with us.
Ian was with us, and I'd never seen
Pete's... Yeah, because I drove him home after.
Oh, right, nice. I'd never seen Pete's cinema before, because it's hidden away behind a door. Yeah. You don't even think he's got a small kind of screening room. I'd never seen a personal screening room
in my life. It's just
right. Oh, right, is it a converted garage?
It's a garage.
Wow.
That
makes sense now when you think about the geography of it.
So, I can't get the geography.
Oh, really? It's one little door. You go in.
Yeah.
And you turn immediately right, and there's a couple of little steps, and then suddenly to your left, there's a big screen, maybe 10 lazy boys.
No, I remember the room, but I couldn't. If someone put me in the kitchen and said, find that room,
right,
there's no way I would find it.
It's close to the kitchen, for sure. But I remember I'd never seen a personal screen room before. Didn't even know that Pete had one. Obviously, Pete's not going to say, hey, I've got a personal screen room. Doesn't really matter. We go in. I thought, he told us we were going to watch the previs. I wasn't really sure what previs was. I was just nodding along going, oh, great, yeah, previs. Sat down. He had a popcorn making machine. Do you remember?
Yeah.
So we all had popcorn, and there was anything that you wanted to drink. I was, at that point, completely addicted to Bundaberg ginger beer. I was drinking like 4 or 5 a day. Had no idea there was like 80% of your daily sugar needs in one bottle. And we sat down and we watched this.
Made you a bit gassy.
Yeah, for sure. We watched this relatively clunky, although obviously very functional, previs, which is an animated, simplified version of what they're going to shoot with the actors, right?
You're quite a, you're a Hollywood guy. You understand movies and all that, Sean. Is previs?
Yeah.
Is that a name that meant something before then?
Well, Sean was going to say animatic, right? Because I think they work on it, the animatic.
Right, and they called it an animatic because what they did was storyboards, those wonderful drawings that they would do for an action sequence is when you usually see them, you know, where they'll draw, you know, what the over-the-shoulder shot looks like, and then they draw an image, just a still, you know, sketch of, you know, a wide shot of Minas Tirith or something like that. Mm. And then they would literally film those storyboards, kind of like Ken Burns, you know, the Ken Burns effect, where he's got a still image and the camera's going down, so you see a soldier in the Civil War, and then you kind of go closer and you see that he's got a letter in his hand or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a moving image of the storyboards, and then previs is the digital sequences, the short digital sequences where they would have strange looking, anamorphic looking characters in a sword fight kind of floating or something like that. And then and then you'd see, you know, the Nazgul fly in and you'd actually animate that, you know,
Yeah.
Thing. So yeah, I remember watching that, and then I remember, I mean, it was so long.
Oh, so
and
long.
They also had our they had our characters, actors had read the voices for our characters.
Right. That's right.
Kiwi
so
actors,
and I remember thinking that the Samwise Gamgee voice was pretty good, and I was nervous.
Right.
You know.
Was there a point I'm sure we don't want to go over rote things, subjects and stuff, but we Billy and I have talked before about that moment where you realize, wow, this movie is huge. I had a moment walking around Bag End. Was there a specific moment for you, Sean, where you thought you knew it was big, but you didn't know it was quite that big until that moment?
Well, there was a succession of them.
Hmm.
The first one was when I was at home in Los Angeles and I'd gotten the part and someone came over with the script, with the three screenplays.
Right.
And when they set it on the table, it made a loud thud sound.
Mm.
Most scripts make a kind of a flap, but this made a thud. And you opened it up and it had a fake name. It had a fake name. Oh my.
Jamboree.
It's like there's a horse peeing in the back. Can you hear that?
No, we can't hear a horse pissing in your garden, Sean.
most horses make a pss, but that horse made a posh. That's a big horse.
So there's Jamboree, it said on the script.
Right.
That's right.
And I was confused. I'm easily confused, Billy can tell you. And I and then I realized that they were doing it so that if you were at a coffee shop or something and you read it, people would not see that it was Lord of the Rings. So I was a part of something that was so important, it had to be kept a secret.
Mm.
And then I opened it up, and I don't know how many movies I'd done where there was watermarking on the screenplay where your name was there.
Mm.
So, but on every page, Sean Astin, written big across the page, and which is totally distracting. Absolutely distracting. I wish I could have gone back and maybe put like Samwise or something different, because every page you turn, instead of getting involved in the story and involved in the characters, I'm just reminded of how important I am. My name is big across the page.
I still hate that. I hate when anyone does that.
Right? Why?
Because I always feel like somehow I'm going to, like, it's going to get out because of me.
Yeah.
And then the page is going to be there with my name watermarked all over it.
They can prove it now.
And people put it in the most stupid things now, don't they?
Mm.
Like, you get any pages for anything, there's your name all over it, and I just get visions of, you know, some leaked screenplay, and it's me.
Have you written a screenplay, Billy? You must have written a screenplay.
I have. I've written a fantastic one. I've written an
is there a part for Sean?
Of course there's
a
part for Sean.
I sincerely hope so, for God's sake.
I'm now going over it in my head to make sure there's a part for Sean.
Well, write one, damn it, man!
I'll do whatever I'm told, I will do it. If you wrote it in one of those... Oh, go on.
I'm going to watermark it and send it to you with Sean Astin all over it. I'll send you the screenplay.
If you could do it
today,
by hand, that would be great.
Even better.
If you just by hand put my name in. It's like you're in trouble. You have to write my name 95 times. But you could just push a button. It's one button. You click a button, and then it spits out a thing with your name or somebody else's name. So I know with scripts that I've written, you feel all of a sudden very important that you can make it you can make people obligated to you in some way by putting their name on it.
I love it.
Now
we cut you off there. So you
big
got
moments.
The script. For one thing, how did he get the script? Did you get the script before you arrived?
I got the script before I got on the plane. Yeah,
I didn't. I didn't get the script till I got to Wellington.
That
was a moment I really remember. I got off the flight with Orlando. We sat in a car, and Janine, the producer's assistant, turned back to us and gave us a leather-bound folder with the Fellowship of the Ring in it.
Right.
And that is the first time I've seen this. I'm down in New Zealand and I haven't even seen this.
Well,
script.
I got there quite late, so that might be the reason why I got it then. But I also remember emailing Pete Jackson and said, don't send the script to the Scotsman because Scottish people will leak information like that.
If you do send it, make sure there's a watermark all over it.
Yeah.
Because Sean probably got
Scotland
it.
Scotland is farther away than me.
Well,
yeah,
maybe that's
that.
It. Maybe it's still on its way. But it could also have been because you were a Goonie and stuff. So
yeah.
You get special treatment, probably.
Goonies do get absolutely special preferred treatment.
For good reason. Yeah, it's
true.
For good reason. I was, you were the person that I was the most enamored to meet because so much of my rainy day childhood moments were consumed with Raiders of the Lost Ark, The Dark Crystal, and The Goonies. It was just, it's just a magical movie. Amazing. So I remember meeting you vividly. But we all spent so much time together, Sean, making those films, especially the first film. But I would put a strong argument forward to say that possibly you, more than anyone else, maybe because you had a young daughter at home, were the most kind of holding so much of the weight of the movie on your shoulders. Even someone like Elijah, who's significantly younger than you, seemed to be getting through his days with a lot less of the weight of the piece than you. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, the I mean, there's so much to unpack. First of all, I was fat, so I was definitely carrying the weight through the experience of working on those movies.
Plus, you had that backpack,
which is not a Oh my gosh, the backpack was. Yeah, when I met Elijah at the Montmaison Sofitel Hotel right next to the Beverly Center, you lived pretty close to there.
Yeah, I did.
Dom, for a while.
With your brother.
And we went there to have a wig fitting with Peter Owen. And I remember thinking how cool it was I get to wear a wig, and then also, why do I have to wear a wig? Mm. And Peter drawing this wonderful drawing of the silhouettes of the hobbits, you know, and why that you want their silhouettes to match with each other. And right. That guy's just incredibly brilliant. Yeah. And when I met Elijah down in the lobby, we saw each other like from across the lobby, some star-crossed lovers moment. And we raced to each other and just embraced and held each other. And we were laughing and so excited. And then, you know, I was 29 and he was 19. Mm-hmm. And I pulled him away from my body. I had my hands on his shoulders. And I said, are you ready for this? You know, kind of self-important. Mm-hmm. You know, are you ready? Like, I know I'm a wise old man at 29. Or are you ready for this young one? And then we spent 2 years with him proving how much more ready he was for it.
Here's a service you should use if you use the internet. ExpressVPN. I know most of you are thinking, well, I don't need to. I'll just put it on incognito mode. Well, let me tell you something. Incognito mode does not hide your activity, doesn't matter what mode you use. And in the US, internet service providers are legally allowed to sell your information to ad companies. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers. That will keep all your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. Most of the time, we don't even know that it's switched on. ExpressVPN is available on all your devices, phones, computers, even your smart TVs. So there's no excuse for you to not use it. Protect your online activity today with the VPN that was rated number one by CNET. Visit our exclusive link, expressvpn.com/onion, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a 1 year package. That's expressvpn.com/onion. expressvpn.com/onion to learn more. No matter how you feel about getting back out there, there's no denying it's an adjustment. And when the world gets too loud, something that I like to do is I pop in my Raycon wireless earbuds. They are brilliant. Sometimes you just need some upbeat music, you know, to pump up your day a little bit, or maybe even stay calm with a guided meditation. I was on my first flight for quite some time the other day there, and I just popped in my Raycon wireless earbuds, and it was nice to hear some of my old playlists again. Of course, you can always use it to listen to podcasts. Say, for instance, me and Dom, right in your ear. Fantastic. They come with a bunch of gel tips for your comfort, so they'll fit like no other earbuds. And They don't stick out your ears like others. Raycon have a 32-hour battery life, so you can listen to whatever you want, when you want, for a really long time. Create your own soundtrack with Raycon right now. Listeners can get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/onion. That's buyraycon.com/onion to save 15% on Raycons. buyraycon.com/onion.
You know, there were financial things that were burdening my brain during that time. We had bought things you wouldn't even think about affect people's life. But if I put the layers on top of it now, 20 years later, you know, and try and think, because I definitely did. My experience was a much harder, more laden. It was a more laden experience, I think, than it wasn't harder. We all didn't sleep the same, and we all had, you know, little things, little injuries here and there. And but for some reason, I definitely carried it. I remember there were all these moments leading in where I was hoping. Have you talked about the Bakshi version, the Ralph Bakshi version of Lord of the Rings from the 1970s?
Yeah, here and there.
The television version. First of all, it was absolutely ahead of its time with some of the, I think they call it rotoscoping, some of what they did with the ring wraiths and some of the sound design was really, really forward thinking, but it was mostly terrible. It was mostly really, really, really awful. And the Hobbits, there's like readings of, if you read the Lord of the Rings, right? Like the Hobbits are these bumbling, bursting into tears, terrified, hiding behind things. Like you could actually have Hobbits that are, if you depicted them in a movie the way they're written, it wouldn't be credible that they're heroic later at the end.
Right.
Like in literature, you can enjoy that they're like, oh, the hobbits are bursting into tears.
Yeah.
But in the Bakshi version, they're really plump, all of them.
Yeah.
And they're, oh, Mr. Frodo, I don't know what I'm going to be doing. Oh, Mr. Frodo, I don't know what I'm going to be doing, Mr. Frodo. And you're like, I remember going to Pete and saying, like, do we have to do it like that? Like, I really don't want to do it like that. And so I feel, and he was like, no, we don't have to do it like that. But I definitely felt like through the whole movie, I was always afraid that something was going to be, that it wasn't going to be right, that it would end up looking too silly in the wrong ways. Like you guys, thank God for you guys, right? You found, you made humor in the way that the hobbits are intended to have humor. If it was just up to me, I was like serious all the time, which is funny when juxtaposed against something else. But if it was just that all the time, it would be boring. And
well, I wonder if some of that is Sam, though, right, Sean? I mean, Sam is kind of laden with the responsibility of keeping Frodo around, and he has to be the serious one who says to Gandalf and the rest of the Fellowship of the Ring, I will take care of him. I am his steward. You have to be the responsible one. I wonder how much of that is Sam coming into your world, you know?
I don't know where I stop and he starts in that sense.
Right.
I remember, like, I played at that as an idea.
Right.
Like, I remember one night we were at the pub early in the shooting, like even before shooting, during rehearsals, and Elijah locked his keys in his flat.
Right.
And I was like, I'll take care of it.
Right.
So I sorted out a locksmith and went in there and got it. And I remember coming in and you guys were all sitting with the drink, and he looked like he was 35 years old the way he carried his cigarette and his drink. And I'm like trying to get my head around that, this 19-year-old kid. And I bring him his key and he's like, oh, thank you so much. Like exactly as Frodo would. Like you just expect that that's how that would be.
Yeah, because right. I remember the day that Barry Osborne and Pete came. Well, Barry Osborne was there. Pete Jackson was there all the time, but Barry Osborne came to set, I think, the first day when we did the Under the Wooded Log moment. And they had said to the four of us, hey, guys, if you could just wait behind when we wrap because we want to talk to you about something. And me, in my own sense of naivety, was just like, oh, whatever. They're going to say, we're so stoked. You guys are with us day one. We're so excited for this thing. We'll have a little, whatever, glass of champagne, a little huddle, whatever. Billy didn't seem to be in any way tweaked. Elijah didn't.
Yeah.
And you immediately, Sean, got the four of us in a huddle and said, what do you think that is about? And I thought, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, it's something. And I thought, no, yeah, Sean's way off.
That.
And he was bang on. Something had happened.
But you I think that's the thing. You have the knowledge. Like, we'd all been in indie movies and stuff, but you'd been in big movies before that, you know? And you've grown up in that world. And I remember that because I just thought, I didn't even think anything.
Nah, they want to say well done.
They just want to say, I don't know, they're going to do another costume call tomorrow or something. Mm. I don't know. But you grabbed us and said, they've seen the rushes, they hate it.
Someone's getting fired. I think you might have said someone's getting fired.
Well, they couldn't have seen the rushes yet because it was the first thing we ever did. Actually, they could have seen... Remember they did the wardrobe test with us? Yes. They took us out in the parking lot and they created tape on the ground and they were like, just wander around.
Yeah.
In character.
Yeah. That's right.
The most awkward thing ever, right? And so we had, and thank God, I was so happy that Sam was stoic because I didn't have to do anything.
Right.
But I watched you guys trying to, you know, just figure out what the fuck to do. And then like, but they had said that and they had seen it and they liked it and they had approved the wardrobe. So I wasn't worried about do you remember when they took us to a special place?
Yeah,
I don't even know where the place was.
They
opened the door and it was a big empty room with four chairs set in it.
Take a seat.
Like a firing squad. and we walked in and we sat down and I just remember being like, oh man, this is not good.
Yeah.
And they came and it was Tim who told, it was Tim.
That's
Tim
right.
Tim was the one
New
who told
Zealand
us, I think.
Producer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was really horribly sad.
So just for anyone listening, for anyone listening or watching, what we're talking about here is the fact that Stuart Townsend, who was for a while going to be playing Aragorn, had at that point left the project, and they told the four hobbits who were on their first day and the first day at work, none of us knew what was going on. Sean almost knew before it had happened what was going on. So I wonder if you were carrying that, Sean, you know?
I absolutely was 1,000% carrying it with me until the last day. Mm. You know you can be replaced because they can just go in and just do the face shots and put the face of whoever they want, of any new person, over the body that you've been moving around for 2 years in the thing. You're basically the body double that they can put the face on and your voice. I was absolutely aware of that the whole time. But the thing was, you know, in a way they knew it was going to hurt us, because another one of the big things that made it that you knew it was going to be massive was that we had 6 weeks of preparation. That just doesn't happen. Uh-huh. And for 6 weeks we got to become really good friends with Stuart. You know, you could see he's the only one who wore it harder than me, for sure. He couldn't get his spirit around how hard it was going to be to do it. And that was another one. There were a lot of things with that movie for all of us, I think, right? That there was like a loss of innocence or something, or just the heaviness of big decision making, you know, and consequential decision making, consequential for all the different people they were hiring to do all the different jobs, consequential for, you know, everyone's the economics of everyone's lives a little bit, which that's the other thing. I said it at the beginning, like the economics weighed on me as much as that and being fat, literally physically. I had run the LA Marathon like 3 months before filming, and I was 135 pounds and skinny. I mean, like rail skinny. And then I wanted to get that job, so I got fat. There's no time in the next 2 years I can't. Like, I have to be fat. And if you don't see yourself, I remember looking in the mirror in the makeup bus and like, who is this fat fuck looking at me? And I can't see the real me anymore.
And who was it?
You know, I can't see me.
Well, let me ask you, what was that fat diet? Because I'm sure there's a lot of actors out there that might have to put on weight quite quickly. What was your diet? Was it ice cream and chocolate? What did you do? What didn't you do?
Okay, do you remember Jeremy Woodhead?
I remember that
Jeremy
name.
Woodhead was the makeup artist.
Yeah.
He was my makeup
artist.
Oh,
nice. Of course. It's one of the only male makeup artists, yeah.
Yeah. I remember that.
And then Ian McKellen stole him from me. That's how I experienced it.
He was so good.
As a thief. He was that benighted English legend, stole my, the makeup artist I like so much. But we went to play tennis at the, there's a tennis center, like an athletic center in Wellington. And we were going on five or six different times. It had become, you know, I was getting in shape.
Right.
I was really enjoying it. They were sweating and that the, you know, but I think it's there. Someone took a picture and put it in the newspapers, on the cover of the newspaper. Mm. It was national news in New Zealand that I was like kind of a star sighting,
right?
But with Lord of the Rings, like they'd hidden us away from cameras and stuff,
mm-hmm.
And it said that I was coming out of the tennis center, and PJ had this look when I walked in the next day, and I was like, oh no, I'm like in trouble for working out, and he said he showed it to me, and I was like, you know, busted. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. And he said, more lollies for Mr. Aston, please. You know, he was like, and they had those gummy, horrible candies that were definitely clog your arteries after just a small handful of them.
Yeah.
But the trick was in weightlifting for like a month before coming to New Zealand, and then stopping weightlifting and continuing to eat.
Okay.
So your body thinks it's, you wouldn't know. You two don't know. You drink all you want. You don't put on an ounce. It's very upsetting.
We're getting there, Sean. We are getting there. Just to go back to what we talked about earlier on about all of us being exhausted and tired, I have this very vivid memory, and I wonder if either one of you can geographically place this for me. We were on location. I think that Sean and Elijah had just started to do some climbing of Mount Mordor. Not sure what you and I were doing specifically, but we were working, and we got a message, probably from Elijah, who was with Sean, that they were finishing a very long day, coming back to the hotel that we were staying at like 9-ish, and that they'd broken you guys' turnaround, and you guys had to be back on set at something like being picked up at 5 a.m. And Elijah said to us, are you and Billy around just to grab a quick dinner? Because Sean and I are both exhausted. And we said, yeah, we were in the bar having a drink. Elijah showed up before Sean. I don't know what Sean was doing. Elijah kind of came over to the table, still covered in mud from the day, not really got all of his makeup off. And he was like, oh, just going to order a quick dinner and we'll sit. And we said, yeah. And then Sean came over and you kind of collapsed almost onto the table, put your arms down on the table. And we're just like, oh, I can't believe this is... It was something like the 7th or 8th day in a row that they'd broken their turnaround. And you ordered food and the two of you ate with us for probably 45 minutes and then you immediately crashed and were up the next day. Do you guys remember where that was, or do you have that memory? No?
No.
Sounds like every day.
It could have been every day. I just remember Sean coming over and his whole... His head and shoulders and chest just collapsing on the table, kind of half laughing, half crying, and then looked up at us and just said, I can't believe they're breaking our turnaround again.
Well, you keep saying break your turnaround. There was no such thing.
Right, that's true. That's true.
It was not a union.
Well, we should explain that. Let's explain that to people listening.
So you guys know that my mother, Patty Duke, my late mother, was president of the Screen Actors Guild in the mid-1980s.
Right.
So the union... and there are different unions in different countries. I say to you guys, because I don't really know that much about... I worked under a SAG contract in England. But anyhow, so certain rules are established, guidelines. Like you have to have 12 hours between the time you wrap and the time you're called back for the next day. Or sometimes it's 10 hours or something like that. And it's a rule. And if they break the rule, then they have to pay $900 or something like that.
Right.
So usually as an actor, you're hoping they break your turnaround because you really want that extra $900.
Right.
But when we got to New Zealand, it was not in a union space. It was not a union project. So really, you guys know, like our quote unquote turnaround was just based on what they thought we could handle.
Mm.
Right. Like you get to make the ears, the Hobbit ears and the Hobbit wig and the Hobbit feet off. And that all took probably an hour, a little over an hour at nighttime to get all the alcohol you know, because it lets the glue loose and everything. And most of the time, not most of them, but a lot of the time, wouldn't even get all the glue off. Just like, you know what, I'd rather have an extra half hour of sleep than get all the glue off that you're just going to reapply in another 10 hours, 9 hours. So, but a lot of times, and then we'd have to come in early, stand on a box and have our feet done at, you know, 4:35, 5:30 in the morning, something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you come in at, say, 5, and you work until it gets dark at 6, 6:30, and then you finally leave by 7, get home, get something to eat, turn around, and go back right away again. It was not, it was hard.
Mm.
It was, yeah. It was really, yeah. really, really, really hard. Yeah. Mm. So, mm. but I mean, it also, you realize what you're capable of.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
You realize the value of the sacrifices that people have made to help get rules like that put in place. But you also realize, like, I can actually tolerate a lot more. The one thing that really was amazing to me about our experience was the crew. The crew was indefatigable. I mean, they literally would work, you know, 15, 16, 17 hours and come right back. And they were always ready to go, happy, fired up. You know, maybe in the 2 years we were there, one time I saw them decide that they collectively weren't happy and they wanted to talk to the producers about it, and they got a bump or something like that. But yeah, you know, it's amazing to, I mean, people think of acting, it's not that hard, right? Like it's not like digging ditches or something or, you know, real manual labor where people work harder than that, but it is hard. And it's the mental, you know, you have to be kind of ready all day long, ready to, you know, at any given moment to do your thing, to have your memory tested and to be able to, you know, do what someone else is telling you to do.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things not acting is that I don't have to do what other people tell me to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Except Billy. When Billy tells me to do something, then I'll do it.
He's the boss. When we had Elijah on, we got into a big music conversation, which concluded with us talking about, was there a specific album or a specific song that kind of summed up New Zealand for you? Was there any particular song or music or something like that that you thought, well, that is my New Zealand experience in an album?
Well, when I was 15, I did a movie, a whitewater rafting movie. I don't think we ever talked about this with Kevin Bacon. It's a classic. It's not the whitewater rafting movie with David Strathairn and Meryl Streep. That was his other whitewater rafting movie. Ours was the one you haven't heard about. And we kept going around to different, we went to Canada a couple times, we went up to the Sierra Nevadas because they were trying to get this whitewater rafting canoeing sequence to look spectacular. So they finally figured out down on the Kawara River in the South Island in Queenstown would be where we could shoot it. So, and I was 15. Well, we flew to Auckland, and I had, because I was underage, I had a friend, a guardian, Joseph Giuseppe Pepe Passarelli, with this big Italian mustache, like Mario mustache. And we drove the full length of the island together, and we only had one cassette tape, and the cassette tape was Billy Joel's Greatest Hits. So I don't know, I might have come with the rental car. But I literally, I mean, to me, I don't know. Okay, so for Lord of the Rings it's probably something different, but when I think of New Zealand and you know, any time throughout the,
when we were trying to remember, because we were remembering what everyone played in our makeup trailers, and I couldn't remember what music you were playing, and Dom did think it was Billy Joel.
Yeah, I said Billy Joel's Greatest Hit. I think I actually said Greatest Hits as well.
Maybe you did play it.
Yeah.
Of all of the music that Elijah played for us, the hundreds of hours of music that Elijah played for us, there's one song that hit me the most that I when I'm running, if it's in my playlist when I'm running, I will immediately go back to that. It's called Driftwood.
Oh, by Travis. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that album was the thing that defined New Zealand for me. Between Billy, Elijah, and myself, we became very territorial over the stereo. And I think there were times where you said, well, let me have a go. And I seem to remember the time where we said, okay, Sean, you can go. It was Billy Joel's Greatest Hits. And I love Uptown Girl, Piano Man. Come on.
And do you remember Christopher Lee putting on some music?
Was it metal?
Yeah, but with him speaking over the top.
He's had a few metal albums, Christopher Lee.
I was shocked when he put that on.
Amazing. I remember that I rapped on the same day as Christopher Lee. And
I thought you meant rapped like...
Oh, no, like Eminem rapped.
Yeah.
No, I put a W in front of it.
All right, I never heard that.
And
I thought I saw him outside in the wizard cloak just doing, you know, just.
Yeah.
He could have done it. He could have done it, Christopher Lee. He could do anything, that man. But you guys would have been there, because I think there's footage of you guys in the audience and us just listening to him. But Christopher Lee was incredibly moved by his experience, and also moved by the fact that he had rapped. And he says this very earnest, very heartfelt thing of, you know, you guys have created magic and, you know, you guys are all legends and this will be remembered forever. And I remember thinking at the time, if this was anyone else, you'd kind of dismiss it. Mm. But Christopher Lee with his voice, you're just kind of like, wow, maybe he's onto something here, you know. Extraordinary man.
Well, he met Tolkien.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. He read it every year.
Yeah, I think he was some sort of a spy or something in the Second World War. Hmm. He had some relationship to the war and to that made it more special to him, because I think Tolkien was writing it during the war and sending chapters to his son Christopher in Europe or something, like in the mainland. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I might be getting this wrong, but I think Christopher Lee was in the SAS and was working behind enemy lines in the Second World War. And one of my favorite story about Christopher Lee's, and I think Elijah's as well, was Elijah and I were with him on location somewhere outside, and he said, we were just chatting about something, and he said, watch this. And he took a Bic pen and threw it into a tree, and it stuck in the tree like a knife.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, if that was a knife, that's
that tree would be a goner.
Yeah, he turned a pen into a deadly weapon. So he was quite an intimidating man, wasn't he, Christopher Lee? Amazing.
He took me under his wing a lot, and we smoked cigars together.
Nice.
Yeah.
And and we were in France at one point. And he took me along the Champs-Élysées. There was some sort of a gentleman's club. Mm. Not like that.
Oh, no. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like, no, not like that. Mm. Like a place where gentlemen would go. It's like a way station mm-hmm. in your day when you're doing Paris mm. to be among, you know, like-minded fellows. You know, deep mahogany paneling mm-hmm. and smoke, you know. And he talked about, we went on the balcony and overlooked the Champs-Élysées, and he talked about soldiers marching and, but anyhow, yeah, he's a legend.
Yeah. I was in, whenever I got picked up in the morning, very often with you, mm-hmm. I think they would pick you up first, generally me second. And on this particular pickup, there was a little note on my call sheet that said, you will be picked up second. And I thought, not sure why they've told me that. And it was an early start for me, five mm-hmm. past five, something like that. So the person being picked up before me would have been picked up at 4:35 or something like that. As I got into the back seat, Christopher Lee was in the front seat on his first day. I'd never met him before.
Ooh.
I got in, noisy little, you know, early 20-year-old boy. I said, oh, good morning, Christopher. How's it going? My name's Dominic. And he turned around and said, I have never been picked up so early for work in my entire career. And I just sat back, just sunk into the chair and thought, no more from me for the next half an hour. I'll keep my mouth shut. Yeah, he's a fantastic guy. Obviously, Sean, we've gone over, or you've gone over with us and also individually, so many of these rote subjects. What was it like to work with Elijah? What's Pete Jackson like? What was your first impression of the film? All that kind of stuff. Are there still things that you would like to be asked about with Lord of the Rings? Still things that need to be mined? Still things that you have to say? Or at this point, are you like, well, I think most of it's been said?
You know, it just depends on how people interact with you. You know, I don't know that I've got a deep well of information that you know, after 5,000 Comic-Con appearances and whatever, that I'm like, wait, there's this one thing I haven't been able to get to, but to me, it's endlessly, you know, my father, you guys never met my dad, I don't think, John Astin, mm-hmm. He was Gomez in the original Addams Family. And he taught me as a very young person that, you know, people are not pieces on a chessboard, and you know, as much as I like strategy and tactics with, you know, in business kind of things or whatever, but on a human level, people are people are, human beings are human beings, and every human interaction is sacred. That's what he always said to me. And so when I meet people, depending on who they are, what's interesting to them, you know, I usually will begin an answer of something that we've talked about so much, and then try and make it about them a little bit, you know, and it is amazing though, when certain little, I heard you say Easter eggs sometimes, Dom, I hear you say, talk about Easter eggs. A little deep in the recess of mind, something will pop up that will remind you, you know, of, that's right. The smell of those sulfur things that we, you know, those sulfur beds. I hadn't, and you can smell them as soon as you think about it, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know, I always think about our helicopter rides. I should give you permission to mock me. You know, it's in your setting. It's only fair.
Now you're our guest. Because you're our guest.
Well, I wonder if over time, now that we're all in our, are you 50 yet, Dom?
No, I'm 44, but we're getting there.
Come on.
Come on.
I know Billy's like 56 at this point, but anyhow, at this point, now that you've known people, like the older you get, like my father's 91, and we talk a lot about how everyone he knew his whole life is gone. All of his friends, most of the people he worked with, you know, like there's when you just, it's like that. So now we know people who've died in accidents and, you know, whatever. Are you any more, even a little bit, sympathetic to my paranoia? Because I existed in a state of extreme paranoia for most of the shoot.
No, of course. I'm sure. Well, I think Billy was much more empathetic at the time. I am much more now. I think, you know, you obviously mature and grow up. I think a lot of that with you came from the fact that you were a young father and none of us had children at that point. So you're probably much more aware of the mortality of people with you being a father and what's at stake for you. There was nothing at stake for me. You know, I was 23. The naivety of me coming into those films in a lot of ways saved me because I had to adopt this very carefree, silly, fly by the seat of your pants, ready to improvise, ready to joke and laugh with Billy attitude. And I think in a lot of ways, you had to adopt the, right, everyone stop messing around. I'm Sam. I'm trying to get this person safe. You're just being loud and noisy over there. That's, you know, kind of what you represented as a hobbit.
Do you remember? Okay, so you did Lost. You must have gone up in helicopters when you were doing that series.
Yeah, often, yeah.
And did you study how they communicate, the pilots?
Sure.
But I don't think, Billy, have you done a lot of helicopter flying?
I'd like to get up in a helicopter once a week at least. As my son said to me when he was very young, he says, I reckon I could fly a helicopter. I don't know if I could land it.
Wow.
I could fly it.
Love to see that. That would be great.
I don't know why he said that. He was about 6 years old.
Well, he's being honest.
Yeah.
Right?
But as a father, you have to teach him. Yeah, you have to teach him how to. When you teach him how to ride a bicycle, you have to show him how to stop first, right?
Right.
But when we were filming, I'm probably not going to be able to adjudicate this moment in this setting, but because it's you guys. So they tell us at any moment, the weather can change. We filmed at the tops of all these great, for the listener, right? At the tops of these great mountain peaks that was the most extraordinary thing. This being places where, you know, no other human being has ever been in the history of the, you know, so, but it could change. So they had sat a, you know, one of those big things that they have like in construction
dinosaur.
Sites, like
a wheel.
Say again.
A wheel?
Not a whale.
Not again.
A whale. It's a good guess.
It was
it's a big
like
one.
An office, like one of those portable offices. One of those portable. Okay, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So and they had thrown in there a bunch of meal ready to eat type of things that the military has, and a Bunsen burner, and some, you know, sleeping bags, and you know, and there's probably 30 of us up there, and they're like, you know, if we have to evacuate and we can't evacuate quickly enough,
right,
you're gonna have to stay huddled together until the weather passes, which can be days, right?
Yeah.
This is what they told us.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
They had to pre-position stuff at the top of the mountain. They didn't do this for their health, right? They were doing it as an emergency scenario. Yeah. So then at a certain point, the people with the walkie-talkies started looking very concerned and saying, the helicopters are coming in. We're gonna stop for the day. And we had just started.
Yeah.
So we were evacuating the mountain.
Yeah.
And you two and Elijah thought it was hilarious. So they were putting the helicopter skid on the edge of a rock. The other skid floating. Right? Floating. Like if they would have turned the power, it would have dropped. So it's floating there so that we can get in. And we climb in, and you guys are laughing and laughing. Now, they had at least two, I think three helicopters. Look at Billy. I don't know if the audience...
There's a lot of this. A lot of this is great.
So we're in the middle of nowhere. We're in the middle of nowhere. It took an hour and a half to drive there in a vehicle, and these helicopters come in. So now they're not taking us back to the place where the helicopters would take off from, the airport, the heliport or whatever.
Instead, they took us
right to the bottom of the mountain. The bottom of the mountain, and drop us off and go right back up to the top of the mountain because I had to get people off before the thing would come in.
Look how excited.
And the look on the pilot's face was very concerned.
This has lived in you for a long time.
Yeah, get it out, Sean.
You need to get this story out.
Come on.
So yes, the answer, Tom, the answer is yes. I had to get this out. Yes, there was one thing I had to get out.
Oh,
so we're getting to the three of you guys are chattering away on the thing. Now, there's no like air traffic control tower, okay? There's just what they call VRF, visual flight, what is it? VFR, visual flight rules, okay? And the clouds are coming in, and you guys are jaw-jacking, and now if you have been in a helicopter since then, Tom, you know that the pilot can push his button,
yeah,
and the sound of you guys talking gets a little bit lower,
yeah,
so that he can talk to the other pilot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Is that done?
Are you done?
I don't know.
So it was all about that button that the pilot presses.
Well, what the button does is it mutes the passengers. Right. But it doesn't mute you. It just lowers your volume a little bit. But you compensated. The three of you.
Right, Sean. There's a lot to get into.
Let's unpack.
Let's go back to the start where they built a thing for us to like be put in
with Bunsen burners.
With a Bunsen burner. That was the thing. So I had sleeping bags and a Bunsen burner.
Oh goodness me!
Yeah, because you have to cook the stuff in the packets
on
a
Bunsen burner. You're not thinking maybe a little miniature gas stove as opposed to a what are you cooking on a Bunsen burner?
That you were getting science at school,
yeah,
in your class. That little Bunsen burner,
tiny flame. You mean a little mini gas stove, Sean? Maybe not a Bunsen burner.
Yeah, you're thinking of something from
Bunsen burner.
No, that's the thing from science class.
So hopefully, in this conversation, hopefully we've each learned something.
But
we're definitely learning things, Sean. Go on, Bills.
I've learned that you've kept that story deep in your psyche.
That's been like a little black butterfly flying around your stomach.
But you have to remember, Sean, that need for safety wasn't just at the top of mountains. I remember we were in a rugby game. Me and you had gone to see a rugby game for some reason.
It was the Bledisloe Cup.
Was it? Do you remember that? It was me.
Very well.
Me and you were sitting in this stadium watching a rugby game, and all of a sudden he went quiet.
It's not like Sean.
And I said, Sean, are you working out emergency exits for us if something happens? And he was like, yeah. And he was sitting working out if there was a bomb over there, I can get out this way. If there was if a monsoon came in, he was working all out in his head. It was brilliant, and I could see
not
the cops.
All of us grew up with hooliganism and the instinct on how to flee. Some of us have to train for it.
My vague recollection of that day, and you're right, Sean, to be careful and try and keep us safe and all that kind of stuff. But my vague recollection of that day was, yeah, we were brought down to a kind of halfway house, and myself and Billy and Elijah were throwing stones and then trying to have the second stone hit the stone that we threw. Do you remember that? We were just killing time.
Yeah.
So you'd throw a big stone and then we were trying to throw the next stone. And we were goofing around waiting, and it was cold, and we were waiting for a helicopter coming in. And then we all became, the three of us, became distracted by Sean, who'd stepped away from the group, not throwing stones, doing this to helicopters, bringing people in. Let's back.
Wait a minute, Sean. That's my memory as well. And in one hand, you had a Bunsen burner.
And a sleeping bag. You were waving around.
The other one had the paddle from ping pong, table tennis paddle.
You weren't directing helicopters, Sean.
You're largely correct,
okay.
But there's a substantial difference.
Right.
All I was doing was pointing to the pilot that I
oh my god!
That I could see the pilot behind him, and you know what the pilot.
Yeah, so you were letting the first pilot know that you could see the second pilot. For
yeah,
what
that's
reason?
Exactly right.
For what
so
reason?
So that he didn't back up into him. Because he didn't back up into him.
Well, can a helicopter go in reverse?
They can pick up and do this very quickly. Have you never played a video game?
But Sean, do you not think that both of those helicopter pilots might have been in cahoots with each other on a radio? That you might not have needed to tell that helicopter pilot number one that his mate is behind him. They're chatting. They're chatting. That's why we were laughing at you. Because we were going, what are you doing, Sean? I'm telling him that he sees him.
You, Sean.
And then I do remember us getting in the helicopter. Go on, Sean. Go on.
I remember the pilots. I got some feedback from my action there. Yeah. I got a thumbs up from the pilot. Like
oh,
this.
Lovely stuff. Lovely stuff. That's
I
great.
Got a thumbs up.
See?
A little 10-4 good
which
buddy.
Could have been
did
to
you
play.
Get a thumbs up?
I didn't. But
no, because he didn't help him find anything.
Right, so hold on. Moving on from this.
Well, then I remember being the four of us being in the helicopter and us chatting, and I remember one moment of Sean kind of giving us a bit of a stern really? Earful, yeah. You know, something like, guys, be quiet! Oh. And Elijah kind of went, ooh, we're in trouble here. Quiet, right. I do remember that moment, Sean.
Yeah. But you know what you said?
What?
Very, very clearly. And you know what you said?
What?
Don't you think that the pilot and his mate are in communication with each other. and I said, they're trying.
Hey, Tom, that was good, wasn't it?
That was great. Wasn't that lovely talking to Sean? I was in hysterics when he was talking about the helicopter thing.
Yeah, he's funny. He's a very funny man, actually.
Yeah, he is. Goofy.
Yeah, I really like him. He's one of the good ones. He's a good human being.
His heart has always been in the right place. And in that situation with the helicopter, all he's trying to do is earnestly keep us safe.
Yeah.
And the three of us, I think, are in a headspace of, psh, come on, we're having fun. And he's like, no, this is a serious situation.
Actually, could all go, yeah, so, could go you know, wrong. So
it's important at times to look at people's point of view.
But it's great. It's great hearing his stories. I really like him.
Yeah,
good.
That was really great. The lovely show.
There was too much for one show. So we'll cut it there. We'll see him again next week.
Yeah.
Along with everybody else who's listening or watching.
That's true. We talked about so much and it went on for so long and we had so much fun that there's just a little bit too much for one episode. So part one this week, part two next week. Let us know if you're enjoying it. Rate, review and subscribe to The Friendship Onion, where you get your podcasts, and on our YouTube channel and on our Spotify playlist. There has been a few comments about problems finding our Spotify playlist. That's because lots of people have created their own The Friendship Onion playlist. But if you keep digging and digging and digging, you'll find the official one.
Oh, so there you are. Also, you can send us emails at thefriendshiponion@castmedia.com.
Yeah, and please enjoy yourself.
and the rest of your week.
The rest of your week, and we'll see you anon.
Toodles.
Bye-bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.